I saw this guy surfing one time at the North End right before the year that I quit. And the guy was out there and he was just running his mouth nonstop. And he's like, I don't even care if I catch a wave. It's all about the process. And to me, I'm like, what is this guy thinking? And now I see it like it's the motion. It's going out there and getting the exercise, paddling and seeing birds fly by and seeing a porpoise and moving your body around and being in the water. And like, who cares if you got a good wave? There's so many other benefits to it that you can't just look at that one.
It's a special place, not because of the walls or the weights or the decor, but because of the characters that hang out here. I'm Jake Waring, and my family has been empowering our community's journey to optimal health and fitness for generations. We are a family, and we help other families. And this is the pursuit of excellence, meaningful results, genuine connections, and having plenty of good laughs along the way. This podcast embodies all those principles. Join us each week as we share stories, insights, and tips that may help you reach your fullest potential in mind, body, and spirit. Jason, stoked to have you here. Keep reading.
Thank you.
You can keep reading. It's your book.
I was just looking at pictures. I don't really read.
Man, I'm stoked to have you. I honestly just stoked to get to interview you. I think you got to interview me. And I've seen you on the water for like, I know this is like a, just such a fan of your surfing in general. And it's weird how I feel like surfing speaks a lot of volumes in general. Your style. And, you know, you're a pretty quiet guy in general, but just your surfing style. I've always, there's a few people here, Wes Lane and yourself and Michael Dunphy, Philip Gould. I'd put him in that category that sits a little bit above. And you're kind of a Virginia Beach icon in surfing. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor. Are we just talking? I thought we were working out. I thought I came over to do a little workout.
We can do a couple in between questions. I'm gonna make you do some laps around the thing. So we'll cut to commercial, and you'll go sprint down to the beach and back.
No, thanks. I'm excited. It's the first podcast I've been a part of. So
tell me a little bit about what you got going on. You're working on a book for surfers.
I am. It's called Virginia is for Surfers.
Yeah.
So it's a coffee table book, which I'm trying to come up with a different name than coffee table book.
Yeah.
To me, like the term coffee table book, I know it kind of bugs me, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something better, a better term for it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yes.
I'm trying to think.
We'll
come up with it during this episode.
Yeah. So I've been working on it for about 8 months now.
Really?
Pretty much full time.
Yeah. Right. So what's the intention behind it? Just gathering all these stories from Virginia Beach and our community?
It wasn't my idea. I wasn't planning on doing a book. A friend of mine, Trey Heighton, who lives around here, I ran into him summer before last, and he's telling me, hey, I have an idea to do this book. I think it'd be really cool. Just interview surfers from Virginia Beach, kind of from across the whole spectrum, just to get like, you know, different viewpoints on the local surf culture.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And I thought he was maybe asking me to be a part of it. So I you know, like messaged him back like, oh, that's awesome. Like, I'd love to be a part of it. And I didn't hear anything from him. And then like, I didn't see him again until this past summer. And so I'm like, hey, how's it going with that book? Like, did you get started? He's like, oh, I haven't done anything with it. And then we kind of talked about it and decided to team up on it.
Oh.
And so he already kind of had a list of people that he wanted to talk to. And so we kind of went through that list, and I started reaching out to people to go interview them. And then he ended up being too busy to do any of it. So it all just, it fell in my lap, which was, you know, it was great because I had all the time in the world. I had just quit my job teaching, which I'd been doing for the last 15 years. And so it was me, and I brought Andrew Tanra in as a photographer to do portraits.
Yeah.
And so we just started going around Virginia Beach, you know, hitting names off the list, and just it's been fascinating.
So Trey, by the way, I think he used to boogie board before he started coming into Virginia.
His story is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he grew up here boogie boarding, and he didn't want to start surfing and feel like a kook. Like once he was into boogie boarding, because it's like, especially back then, you know, when he was a kid, you know, we're talking like 90s. It was like, you really didn't want to be a kook out there.
Yeah.
You know? So it was the heckling and the joking at, you know, around First Street was just so intense that he was afraid to go through that learning process. So he just kept boogie boarding until he, after he graduated and moved to California and didn't know anyone, then he felt like he could start surfing.
Yeah.
Because no one was going to joke him.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting really good and charging massive waves up in Northern California.
Exactly. Have you heard a lot of stories kind of like that about like just people's kind of entry into surfing?
Yeah. It's cool because there's so many different ways you can come into it. Mm-hmm. So that's something I had like in each person's interview. The first part is kind of how it started for them.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, some people grew up at the oceanfront and they just, it's been a part of their life for as long as they can remember. And then you have people like, I mean, I came into it, I was 12. I lived in Green Run. I lived in Norfolk and I lived in Green Run through elementary school. And then like sixth grade, we moved to the Great Neck area and I just did whatever my brother did. Mm-hmm. So he started surfing. And so I followed him down to First Street and started surfing. And then you have people who came as adults and learned, like had never, you know, didn't grow up here at all, even like in this vicinity whatsoever, and came here as adults and learned to surf then and kind of worked their way into the surf culture. So there's so many different ways just to come into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you seen kind of surf culture change over the last several decades as well too? I mean, as far as people accepting
it's
somebody coming
far
in
or more accepting.
Oh, now. Gotcha.
Yeah. I think surfing has always been accepting, especially of weirdos.
Yeah.
It was kind of this little tribe of sort of renegades, like when I first got into it. And it's like they sort of welcomed, you know, other people that kind of weren't normal, I guess, you know? Yeah. It's
people that kind of cut against the grain a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It felt like a renegade thing to be doing, even though we're surfing knee-high waves.
Yeah.
It's like, not a lot of people were doing it. So it still kind of felt like we were doing something like really out of the ordinary. But then everything started changing when longboards kind of came back into vogue. Like when I started, there was no one on a longboard. Mm-hmm. Like you could not find a longboard in a surf shop. Nobody would paddle out on a longboard, at least not like First Street or any of the kind of competitive type areas like that. And then it was like late 90s when longboarding kind of just started coming back, and then the softboards and the surf camps, and you know, that completely changed the entire lineup and the you know, all of surfing in Virginia Beach and around the world.
Yeah, because there's a lot of dynamics too with just how you catch waves, even with a short board versus longboard.
Yeah.
And there can be somewhat of a competitive advantage.
Oh, absolutely. Right? No. And it's
even we're seeing that now with like stand up paddle boards.
Oh, yeah. It just keeps going. It keeps going. You know, someone's going to be out there on a 20-foot board before you know it. But I mean, I love longboarding. I've always had fun longboarding here and there. And like, you know, I like to ride whatever the waves call for, kind of. But I don't like the idea of using a longboard as a crutch to just like, I kind of like the pecking order of like, you know, the people who are experienced and have the most wave knowledge, like getting the best waves, rather than somebody just paddling out on a giant board and sitting out past them and catching a wave before anyone else even has the opportunity to. That's sort of where it's gone. I mean, it's nice that it's open now. It's more, you know, welcoming for all different groups of people. Like there's hardly any girls doing it when I grew up. There were a few, and you know, there's, you know, Jane Seymour and her sister, and there were a few, and they were, you know, super cool. It's great to see them out there, but there just weren't many. And then when I started doing surf camps, same thing. It was, you know, 5-10% girls, and now it's like 50% or 60% girls. So it's great to see that change in terms of just kind of opening up.
Bring a lot more positivity to the lineup, I'm sure.
Absolutely. You know, so. It's not a bunch of grumpy old dudes, you know. It's as soon as a, you know, girl paddles out, it does kind of change the atmosphere a little bit.
You know, you brought up an interesting topic, and we do this, we actually do this in the gym too. We started a youth performance program called Grit. And the one thing we really wanted to get out of it was teach kids etiquette too, you know, and how to, like, you know, same thing with the gym. It's a very intimidating place to go into. It's like, you know, but there is a lot of just teaching people how to work out and go to the gym, and there's etiquette around it too. And I think that's kind of what you were talking about. There is a lot of etiquette that goes into surfing.
It's supposed to be.
It should be. Yeah, because it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it looks real fun and water's somewhat soft, but depending on the on the wave, there's some places around the world that gets critical.
Yeah. And, it can be just as dangerous here on a knee-high summer day as it is surfing big waves somewhere because there's so many people in a small area. Like with the first day of surf camp, I tell the kids, like, we go over all the dangers, you know, and they're like sharks and stingrays and they're like all these crazy things. And then I'm like, we go through all those and I'm like, okay, you know, want to know what the biggest danger is out here? I'm
Lee
like,
rat.
look around you. It's each other.
Yeah.
And yourself, like, you know, you got to like cover your head when you fall. You got to keep your eyes like toward the ocean because, you know, there's stuff coming. People will be coming at you and you just have to really raise your awareness level. We get kind of cooped in here in the summer with the surfing areas. And it's like, you really just have to be aware. It's dangerous. You're going to get run over. You
know? Yeah.
It's not a question of if you're going to. Like, you're going to.
Did you write a book on that?
I did write a book. It's sort of in the model of the Dummies books. It's called The Kook's Guide to Surfing. It's not just about etiquette. It has a chapter on etiquette.
Yeah.
But it's kind of everything you need to know when you're getting into surfing. So it's like how to surf and all about surfboards, all about waves, all about maneuvers and just kind of everything.
Yeah.
And it's
There's a lot to think about going into surfing that you probably don't think about.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's, we were talking before we even jumped on here about, sometimes I feel like my life is like, you know, a computer with a bunch of tabs open. Mm-hmm. And there is, you know, when you go out into the lineup, my dad uses this term, expand your vision, which I really like because when you have to read the ocean and what it's doing, but you're also playing a chess match with the people in the water, you're looking out for other people. How do you, like, does surfing kind of help you focus or does it become like?
I don't know. I feel like once you've been doing it for a while, you can go out there and not think, you know, it's almost like it's where you just go to forget everything else. Cause like you are like, you naturally tune in to nature and like the conditions and the crowd and everything like that. And then when you're actually on a wave, that's like ultimate focus, but I don't feel like I'm focusing, you know, it's more just like my mind is doing it naturally just because I've done it for so long and it just tunes everything else out. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a, you know, kind of a meditation, I guess, in a way.
It might be too long ago, but do you remember that, like when you first started surfing, like, is there the, you know, just the kind of overwhelmness of like starting? And do you remember the point where you like, you started getting it?
Totally, totally. We saw the picture of Chris Decker earlier. My first session was with Chris.
Oh, really?
And Brad Harrell. So I grew up doing like football, baseball, karate, you know, more like kind of mainstream type sports out in Green Run. And then when we moved to the Great Neck area, you know, my brother started surfing and I met Chris in elementary school and he surfed and I got a board from an uncle who'd let me borrow this board. And, you know, next thing I know, Chris is going surfing and he's like, hey, you want to come? And his dad, who was a big realtor here, he had an appointment at the beach. So we threw all of our boards in the trunk of his Cadillac, I think. And, he dropped us off and we went out, it's like 23rd Street or something like that. And Brad and Chris knew what they were doing. They had been surfing for years and I'm just, you're taking everything in, you know, you're just, oh, how do you do this? How do you do this? Like I put my wetsuit on backwards oh shoot, like this isn't still how it goes.
And,
you know, I paddled out and if I caught a wave, I went straight pile driving into the sand, you know. Ooh. It was not a success in terms of surfing whatsoever, but it was a success in terms of the camaraderie of like the adventure of going to the beach with my friends and, you know, his dad just dropping us at the beach and leaving. And it's like, oh my gosh, like we're in this wild environment by ourselves and there's waves. And it's
you're
like,
a kid that's just free.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. And that was like in May. And like that summer, I came down as much as possible. You know, I'd ride my bike from Great Neck carrying a surfboard and anytime I could get down, you know, I would just spend the whole day down at First Street. And before too long that summer, it's such a great place to learn to surf here. It's not a great place once you get good at surfing, then yeah. It kind of leaves you wanting. But to learn to surf here in the summertime, it's inviting, it's warm, it's the waves are gentle. You do have the good people you get to see, and then you see, okay, this is my next step, and then I need to learn that and learn that. And the steel pier had been gone just for a couple years, and there were these buoys out at First Street from like the shrapnel left from mm-hmm. the steel pier after they had gotten rid of it. And I remember those buoys, but it seemed like it was a really flat sandbar, and the waves would break by the end of the jetty and just kind of reform and reform and reform. And you start catching whitewaters, and then eventually one of your whitewaters reforms like kind of into an actual wave. And I remember the first one, which I would have been 12, 1982 at First Street.
Wow.
And just the feeling, the difference in like, oh, I'm riding whitewater and just trying to hang on to like now all of a sudden you're on like a wave with a face on it. And it's like just such a different feeling than anything else in the world. And it's, you know, it's unforgettable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a unique sport too, where you are, there is a lot of just natural, you know, just the bottom of the ocean, what the sandbars are like, what the swell's doing. Yeah. There's a lot of variables to surfing. It's not like snowboarding or skateboarding where you can just show up and you have something every single time. It's that there's a lot of luck involved. And I feel like sometimes when you get that, you know, when everything just happens just right, it's almost like that divine intervention or something. Yeah.
The nice thing when you're getting into it, especially as a kid, it's like you don't care how the waves are. You're just going. It can be the worst day of the year and you're just going to have a blast, especially mm-hmm. if you like you have your friends with you. And so that was kind of cool, kind of being oblivious to all the different elements of weather and all that. And then once you get a little bit better and you're like, okay, now I want a little bit bigger wave and I want to find like a better shaped wave. And then you start to learn all about the weather and all the elements to make a wave and mm-hmm. the bottom contours and all that kind of stuff. And you really do kind of become a weather person when you're into surfing, because you want to know how not so much anymore because we have Surfline. It tells us everything we need to know. But I made huge mistakes when I was first trying, because it was like, they don't tell you that like a west wind is blowing from the west, not to the west. Uh-huh. So it was like, my dad was like, gonna take Chris Decker and I down to Hatteras. He's like, you know, let me know when the waves are going to be good. And there was no surf line. So it was just, I would check the newspaper. The weather was, I think, on the back. And I would look at the weather and I'd be looking for like offshore winds or whatever I was looking for. But I had the winds backwards. And finally, I'm like, Dad, it looks like tomorrow is going to be good. Let's go. So I call Chris and we get in the car, you know, 5 a.m. and we drive down to Kitty Hawk. And it's like onshore and like ankle high and breaking right on the beach. And I'm like, it's the newspaper said the winds were going to be right. Yeah. And so we wasted them. I mean, we had fun. We went and ran down the dunes and did the water slide. And the funny thing is, just talking about kind of what we have here in Virginia Beach, is right around the corner in Frisco, the waves were head high and glassy. And I had no idea. So I come back the next day, I'm surfing First Street, and I see this guy that I know, which is Stefan Michaels, I think.
Yeah.
And, he's talking about, were you in Hatteras yesterday? I'm like, yeah, I went down there. It was flat. He's like, were you in Frisco? I was like, head high and perfect. And I was just like, oh, gosh, no. And then I started realizing that I blew it. And I mean, I think I was 13 at the time or something. So I started paying a little more attention to what the winds actually mean and learning about when we will really get waves.
That's so funny. That's how I remember forecasting too, is looking at the newspaper every day, and there was just the tide charts high and low, and I wouldn't know anything. I would just look at the tides and I would just keep kind of looking in between, because you never really know.
Yeah,
especially in Virginia Beach. That's,
if you know the tides in Virginia Beach, that's probably more important than anything,
because
a lot of the conditions that we have, if it's around low tide, within a couple hours either side of low tide, there's a wave you can ride.
Mm-hmm.
If it's high tide, even if there's a good swell, a lot of times it's just, you know, not really breaking or slamming right on the beach.
Yeah.
So the tide is a huge factor here.
So you do a lot of camps too?
Yes. Yeah, I've been doing camps since the 90s.
Okay.
I did so Cheney Cole had the first camp in Virginia Beach. It was called Oasis. Dude,
really? I was with him last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. He works out in the gym all the time.
Oh, cool. Yeah. He's a great guy. he started the first camp here in 1991, I believe, 92, something like that.
Is that in Croatan?
It was at Pendleton.
Pendleton.
But we would meet at friend's school.
And, I think I remember doing that. I think I remember, like, they taught me to carry a longboard on my head, but I had it upside down, so I had all this wax on my hair.
Well, I used to think when I first saw surfboards, like, somebody gave my dad a longboard, and we had it in our backyard. No one ever rode it. I wish I had it now. It's probably, like, a collector's item, but I thought the fin went up, so it looked like a shark when you're riding through the water. Really? I had no idea. But, yeah, so I started working for Cheney. I was helping him with his camps, and it was cool. It was like working with a couple of my best friends, and, you know, just it was a blast teaching kids. I realized the first day seeing that look on a kid's face when they get that first wave, it's like it took me straight back to when I was 12 and I got that first wave. You know, it's like I recognized that feeling, you know, and it's like being able to see that for a job. You know, get paid to go introduce kids to this was, you know, it was like the best job you could imagine.
Yeah. So do, fun. Do you ever keep up with any of the campers kind of like, do they continue surfing afterwards or is?
Oh, yeah. So a lot of my campers, you know, since I started my own camp, I mean, which was like 1997, a lot of my campers come back year after year. They'll do like several weeks in the summer, come back 3-4 years, and then they start working for me when they're like 14-15, and then, you know, so they become like kind of helpers, and then they become like full-fledged instructors. And I've had people run my camp that learned to surf at my camp. And then I've been doing this so freaking long. I've had people whose parents I taught back in the Oasis surf camp days.
Yeah.
They're bringing their kids to my camp.
Yeah. I feel like once you become a surfer, you're always a surfer. Is just one of those things that
I don't know. I mean, a lot of people, like if I looked at all the people that have been through my camps in the years, percentage-wise, I have no idea.
So it's not
a lot of them.
Everybody.
It's just another camp.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't imagine seeing it like that.
Yeah.
But I think for a lot of them, it's like, okay, we're doing lacrosse camp and then we're going to do, you know, soccer camp and then you got a surf camp. And it's like they leave and move on to the next thing.
Gotcha.
Which that doesn't make sense to me. It's like, you say once you're a surfer, you're always a surfer. I feel like, you know, if I stopped surfing today, you could bring me back to the beach in 20 years and I would first wave I see, I'd be mind surfing that wave. And if I'm watching TV and see a wave, I'm mind surfing that wave. It's like, I can't imagine not looking at a wave and imagining surfing it.
Yeah. Didn't you stop surfing for a little while?
I did. I quit for a year.
What was that like?
Looking back on it, it was great. It was the best decision ever, I feel like.
Why? Because you were just too addicted to surfing at that point?
Well, no, it wasn't anything like that. So the idea came about, there was this article in the Surfer's Journal, this writer, Brad Malekian, great writer. He wrote a whole article about just the idea of quitting surfing. And he talked to all these different surfers and basically found that like people don't just quit surfing. Once you're into it, I mean, if you just do a camp, you might not do it again because you're on to the next camp next week. Mm-hmm. But once you really get into it, like people don't just quit. Like maybe their job takes them somewhere or like their responsibilities, family, they have kids, they just don't have the time or they get hurt. Like an injury could keep you out. But people don't just go, I'm just not going to surf anymore. And I read that article and then I'm surfing one day up at the North End. It's just like a November cold choppy day. I'm surfing by myself, no one around. As far like I look both ways, there's nobody. It's just me, cold water, fun little waves. You know, I'd been doing it for 30 plus years at that point. And like at the reading that article, I just started thinking about it. I'm like, what if I quit surfing? I love just like random challenges. And I'm like, I wonder if I could quit surfing. And it's just like me, I have no one to discuss this with. And I'm just like, by the time I came in a half hour later, I had decided I'm going to quit surfing for a year. I'll do it for a year. And it was November. So I'm like, I'll start January 1st, all of next year, which would have been 2014, maybe. I'm like, I'm not going to surf January 1st to December 31st. I'm just not going to do it just as a challenge, just to see what would happen. Because I could barely even remember my life before I started surfing. I didn't feel like it dominated my life. If you ask my ex-wife, she would say it dominated my life. You ask my kids, they would say it was my life, you know? But to me, it's like, I didn't know anything else. And I just wanted the challenge. I thought of it as like the guy that ate McDonald's every meal for a month straight, you mm-hmm. know, and did the documentary on it and just like to see what would happen kind of thing. You know, to me, it was more just like a social experiment. Like, I wonder what would happen. And so that's what got me into it. And then I ended up doing a blog about it. And then I've just written a whole memoir that's coming out next year, kind of based on that.
Gotcha. So I guess you're going to explain this in the memoir, but you said you look back on it and glad you did it.
Are you tired of feeling sluggish, out of shape, and unmotivated? Introducing Xrcize, the all-natural solution for boosting energy, building strength, and improving mood. Now available anytime at Waring's Gym. Xrcize is a fast-acting, non-prescription solution, clinically proven to reduce stress, improve cardiovascular health, and sculpt your body, all with just 30 minutes a day. Side effects of Xrcize may include increased muscle mass, enhanced mood, boosted self-confidence, and a stronger heart. In some cases, users may experience the desire to wear smaller jeans and post-workout selfies. Talk to your loved one today to see if Xrcize at Waring's Gym is right for you. Join now and take the first step toward a stronger, healthier you.
Yeah, yeah. So just in many ways. And it wasn't until like a little after that I really started realizing it. And just in surfing terms, you don't really know something when you're in it every day compared to when you step away from it, I think, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. It could be a relationship. It could be your profession. It can be, you know, your favorite pastime, whatever it is. Once you are completely removed from it and you have time to really just like think about it and see what life is like without it, it gives you a new perspective of what it does mean to you. And once I started surfing again, like that year was tough. You know, it was like we had a ton of waves. Like as soon as I quit, it was like January pumping and there's these like 70 degree days in January when there's uh-huh. waves. And it's like so rare that that happens, but it was like back to back swells. And I'm like, you know, I was living at the beach and you can't not see it. I wanted to see it. I wanted to go through whatever pain and struggle was involved. Like, I mean, really, if that's your pain and struggle, your life is pretty good. You know, if yeah. it's just not being able to surf for a little bit. But no, I wanted to experience all those things. And looking back on it afterwards, my relationship with surfing is now it doesn't control me. Like if there's waves and I miss it, like, you know, Andrew's like, oh, I'm going to Hatteras. It's going to be good. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, I don't think I can make it that day. I'm not all bummed. I'm not going to like worry about it. I miss it. There's going to be another swell. And it's like, not that big a deal. And on the other hand, if I feel like surfing, no matter how the waves are, I'll just find the right board for those waves and go surfing and have just as much fun as if I had surfed that really good day. And it's like, I feel like it's, you know, it's not like more important, less important to me now, but it's like kind of just a different relationship I have with it. It's like, I know whenever I go, I'm going to have fun and I'm not going to worry if I miss it.
Yeah.
It's like, especially around here, it's like we have these little windows, you know, it's like Thursday at 2 p.m., you know, no matter what, you got to be there because like by 4 p.m., it's over.
Yeah.
And it's like everything just gets pushed aside and it's just, you know, tide, wind, everything like. It does kind of control you and it's not really by choice, but since that experience, like I feel like I have a much healthier relationship with surfing.
Yeah, that's real interesting that you bring that up because I see a lot of similarities with the gym too, where mm-hmm. you almost get obsessed over, you get results from consistency, but sometimes you beat yourself up so much mm-hmm. when you miss something or if you're missing out that it almost causes more stress to your life than the act of just not doing it
right
and getting back up again and just, you know, so
yeah. I think in Virginia Beach, and I'm sure a lot of other places are like this as well, is like surfers think like, oh, I have to surf because it calms me down and like that's my stress reliever. But like, yeah, it brings stress into your life when it's like, oh, the waves suck, I'm pissed off, like, oh, it's, when's it going to be good? It's like, it's never good here. Oh, it's, you know, it's crap. It's like, oh, I missed it. Oh, like it's just like, it kind of can add stress.
Yeah.
So when you sort of just drop all that, it's like, I only have the good parts of it now, I think. Yeah.
And it's tough too. Sometimes within crowds too, you know, it's your happy place surfing. And then you hear a lot of negativity out there too. And if we don't have good waves, then it almost like, you know, it can bring you down a little bit.
Yeah. You know? That's something I've never understood is like, I see people surfing and they'll catch a wave and it'll close out and they get mad at the wave and flip off the wave and start cussing. And like, I don't know. I've never even like, that's never really crossed my mind to do that. Like it's the whole experience to me. It's like all of it. Like you're still, I mean, if I went out and didn't catch a wave, like, yeah, I'd be bummed. But if I caught waves and they closed out, but I'm still catching waves, it's like, I think about the other stuff you could be doing. I can't imagine getting mad at the wave.
Yeah.
Yes, our waves suck. They do.
Yeah.
But if you don't like it, then move somewhere else because.
Yeah. Answer this question for me. So I've been surfing for about like probably 30 years now. Mm-hmm. And why do I still suck? Is that, can you answer that for me? I don't know. I don't know how that happens. I've been trying so hard my whole life and I still am not that good at it.
When you say trying so hard, like what do you.
Probably over trying. I'm just.
No, I think it, like the how you go about it is probably a big part of it. The younger you are when you get into it makes a big difference. And
yeah, I didn't start till I was probably about 15 or so.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's plenty of people start at 15 and get really good. I mean, even 12, when I started at 12, nowadays, that's kind of old. I think you know, so many people are starting way younger.
Do you see a lot of adults getting into it
now? I see a lot of adults get into it. It's hard to get good starting as an adult. But
you probably have more fun.
As long as you know. Yeah. But it's like, I mean, you think about John Florence, the best surfer in the world. He rides a wave. Like his expectation is at a certain level. Everyone else in the world might just go, oh my gosh, he just ripped that wave. And he probably kicks out and goes, dang, I really kind of screwed that turn up. Like I didn't come out the way I wanted. And it's like, even if, you know, you're just starting out, it's like you get the same feeling from a wave that he gets from a wave, probably even better because you're not picking it apart, you know, like your performance and all that kind of stuff. You're just enjoying every aspect of it.
Yeah. You get real critical based off your expectation. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But as far as getting good at surfing,
it's relative, right? Would you?
Yeah, it is. But it's so much of it is understanding waves and not trying to overpower waves. Like, some of the skinniest surfers I know are the most powerful because they know when to push and how to push rather than just dropping it on a wave and just going, you know, I'm gonna cut back, you know, it's like. If you don't know what the wave's doing and you just try to impose your will on it, it just isn't going to work. There's no way. You really have to – vision is a part – like my vision's getting bad, but I don't know. But vision as far as looking at a wave and knowing what the wave is going to do. Any other activity – like you go into the gym like and you got the weights right there. Like you see where the weights are. You come back an hour later, the weights haven't moved. It's like – you look at a wave and it's constantly moving. It's like even like a, you know, a skateboard ramp. The ramp doesn't move. It's like similar to surfing, but the ramp doesn't move. You go snowboarding, the mountain doesn't move, you know. And surfing, it's making all these hundreds and hundreds of tiny little predictions of like, okay, what's this section going to do? And where should I be when it breaks and all that? And it's a lot of times I don't think about it when I am surfing and maybe I'll see like a video afterwards of like the waves I caught that day. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, how did I know that that was going to do that? And it's just like I read this really cool book, The Sports Gene. Are you familiar with that? You should be. You're like in this. I didn't see it on the bookshelf. Yeah. But one of the things, the sections was just like vision. And like, no matter what activity you're involved in, what sport, it could be chess, it could be polo, it could be surfing, whatever. It's like, they did all these experiments where they looked at like, you know, like a master player in that thing. And they showed them a picture for just like a millisecond. And the people that were really good at it, that you just show it for a millisecond and pull it away, they could tell you what's going to happen next. Mm. Like in a, maybe it's a basketball game or it's chess or it's whatever. It's like, and same thing with a wave. It's like, if you really understand waves, especially like, you know, I've surfed Virginia Beach for 150 years. It's like, I feel like any wave at Virginia Beach, I can look at it and I can turn around and tell you what it's doing.
Yeah.
It's like, if you know what the wave's going to do, everything's easy. If you don't, you're just reacting to the waves instead of like going, okay, this is going to be the spot I need to be. So I need to like go to the top and get my speed to the bottom and come back up here. Yeah. And it's like rather than reacting, I feel like when you really can read the waves, it's more like, it's, I guess it's still reacting.
Well, you're more proactive, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say it's proactive, but it's just knowing what the wave's going to do and putting yourself in the right spot.
Yeah, what's that, the book, The Sports Gene?
The Sports Gene. That
sounds really interesting.
Yeah, the whole thing was fascinating, but that part really stood out to me. And I look at someone like Kelly Slater, like I feel like no one really thinks about this. They just think, oh, he's a ripper. He's, you know, he's the best surfer ever, whatever. But it's like, I feel like his vision, like he looks at waves and I think of like how I look at a wave and I feel like I have good wave vision and knowing what a wave's going to do. But his is like off the charts beyond mine in terms of he knows it way better and he can put himself in like some crazy position because he knows how to, what the wave's going to do to help him come out of that position.
Yeah. You bring up Kelly Slater and you wrote his book.
I did. It's his autobiography, Pipe Dreams. But yeah, I wrote it. I kind of, he lived it, but I did everything else.
Okay. How did that happen?
So I knew Kelly from competing against him in the East Coast Championships.
Okay.
I beat him several times. No, I didn't. He kicked my butt. But, and then we were like on the ESA All-Star team at the same time when, you know, we were teenagers. So I got to know him a bit. And then I was working for Surfline during the whole like .com boom. It was swell.com at the time. But, and a guy that worked for me had just done Tony Hawk's book. Mm-hmm. And that was also an autobiography, but it was written by this guy that I worked with who was friends with Tony. And I was like, wow, like that would be really neat to do a book like that on Kelly. So I reached out to Kelly and I'd kind of seen that the .com boom was going to bust. Like we were already kind of laying off staff and everything. And I'm like, gosh, I'm going to need another job. I'm like, I should do a book on Kelly. That would be cool. And so I sent him a message and he's like, yeah, I'm busy right now. I don't have time to do anything like that. I was like, okay, whatever. And then sure enough, a couple months later, I get the call that, you know, they lay off the rest of the editorial staff. So I don't have a job. And then, you know, not long after that, I get an email from Kelly like, hey, remember that book we were talking about? Like, let's do it. So he already had the deal with HarperCollins to write it.
The publisher?
Yes.
Okay.
So he just needed someone to write it. And so I think they probably went to Steve Hawk first, Tony's brother, who I worked for at Surfer Magazine.
Yeah.
Great guy. He's like the nicest guy ever. He taught me so much. And I think he probably, I don't know if he realized it or someone else did, but like, hey, what if we had somebody closer to Kelly's age and somebody who grew up on the East Coast who, you know, couldn't understand what he experienced a little bit more maybe. And so they reached out to me and asked me to do it.
Oh, interesting. I was going to say, it's a lot of pressure. For people that don't know, I mean, Kelly Slater is arguably the best surfer.
Who's going to argue that he's not?
I don't know, but yeah, it's some Brazilian.
I mean, he's not today, but yeah. I mean, he was for decades, I would say, probably. Not that I know anything, but I didn't feel pressure on that one.
Yeah.
I feel way more pressure on the Virginia Beach book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, you know, I kind of have pride coming from Virginia Beach and like, you know, wanting to make sure that I represent Virginia Beach, you know, honestly. Like, I don't want to make it look better, try to make it look better than it is. I just want to present it honestly because I think it is an awesome place to learn to surf. And I think the surf community here is awesome. And I just want to represent it well. So I feel like pressure on that. The Kelly one, it was kind of like, you know, it was, did a bunch of research for a couple weeks. Got a bunch of articles, every article I could find on him. Mm-hmm. So like I met him in Hawaii for 2 weeks during the Pipe Masters and had just page after page of questions.
Oh,
and we
gotcha.
Just sat down with this little neat little recorder he had bought in Japan and just did hours and hours and hours of, you know, just me going through my list of questions and just, you know, him talking.
Any aha moments from interviewing him? Cause I mean, he's a,
So, I mean, there's a lot, I guess. So it's hard to pick one. I mean, I definitely left with a more of an appreciation for him as a person, just because it's like, you know, being the best surfer ever kind of also makes you like the most famous surfer ever, I guess. And everywhere we went, even in a place like that, which is like the surf mecca of the world, it's like everywhere we went, someone's coming up to him asking him for something like his, just his time or a photo or, hey, can you give me some Quicksilver chunks or whatever? And he was so gracious with everybody that came up to him with his time. Like, oh yeah, I'll take a picture. And then they start telling him some super stupid story. Like, I saw you when you were 14 surfing Cocoa Beach. And it's just like, you know, he's smiling the whole time and just like, that's got to get old.
Yeah.
You know, it's like to be so friendly to every single person that comes up just blew me away.
Yeah. And he's arguably both, but we'll get off Kelly topic in here in a second. But like, would you consider him more of an artist or an athlete?
He's more of an athlete.
Athlete,
absolutely. Yeah. I don't like to think in surfing. I don't like to label surfing as a sport as much as, I mean, it's something different for everyone.
Yeah.
But his whole mindset was the competition thing, you know. And it's like you can see he did it till he was 52, 53, you know, he's still doing it competitively. And that was such a driver for him. And it was for me growing, you know, Virginia Beach in the 80s, Wes. And, you know, so competition was huge. You're stuck out at First Street with 100 people and like, you know, fighting over waves and wanting to get better and climb the ladder and all this stuff. And so I've been working for years to get the competition brain away as far as possible. But for him, it just really seems like the competition aspect. He's just a super competitive person in everything. Ping pong, doesn't matter what it is. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
To the death.
He's an athlete. Almost,
you know. So it's like the competition side of it, you know. Yeah. And he treats it, you know, the way he takes care of his body and all that kind of stuff. Like he's definitely an athlete in every way.
So you're also helping with opening up Atlantic Park?
Will be working there.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm kind of overseeing all the instruction that they'll be doing there.
Okay.
So I'll be hiring instructors and training and, you know, we'll be working with like beginner, like all levels.
In Atlantic Park, just for people that don't know, it's a indoor outdoor.
It's outdoor.
Wave park.
Yeah. It's an outdoor wave.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely outdoor. But it's the Wave Garden technology, which is incredible. You know, it's got every different level of waves. And, you know, there might be 2 days a year where the ocean is better than the waves there. The other 363 is like, that's going to be the best place around to surf.
It's going
to
be year round.
It'll close for a few weeks in the winter for maintenance.
Oh, gotcha.
And then I think, you know, maybe every few years they have to like drain it and refill it.
People keep asking me, is it a heated pool?
It's not heated.
Okay.
But it will be warmer than the ocean just because the is protected, you know, from the by the buildings around it. So the wind isn't going to have as much of an impact on it. And then it's a perfect peeling wave with a channel. Whereas if you go surf anywhere out here in the winter, you're going under waves and you're just open to all the elements.
Oh, gotcha.
Whereas there you paddle out with dry hair, you're catching a bunch of waves, you know, it's just waiting in line to catch a wave. It's not waiting for an hour for a wave that might never come.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, your wave, there's a wave every 8 seconds.
Yeah.
So when you get to the front of the line, you're catching your wave.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, you'll be warmer just because of all those things.
And you're going to be doing lessons there.
I'll be overseeing all the instruction as well as just some other water ops, you know. I'll be, you know, we'll be doing contests there.
If you're going to be doing contests, but.
Yeah. One of the things we want to do is get some interscholastic events going there. I've already met with a lot of the high schools locally to get surf clubs started as sort of the first step to getting like high schools competing.
Oh, wow.
At cool. the surf park.
Yeah.
And camps, like, you know, regular surf camps I'll be kind of overseeing in the summer. But then I have a free camp that I do for people, kids that can't afford camp every year. And I want to do that there. And, you know, as much as we can to bring groups in and just give them that opportunity in kind of a contained environment to experience surfing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not going to replace the ocean in any way, but it's like, it's a easier way to get into it without all those other elements, you know, the worry of the sharks and the brown water and the.
And I'm sure you can teach etiquette a lot easier.
Yeah.
Right. In that
it's different sort of etiquette because it's not going to be, you know, 10 people paddling for the same wave. It's more just like, stay in line, like no cutting in line, you know, which is sort of the same thing, but a little bit
really
different.
Same thing out there in the water. There's a, we call it a pecking order.
Yeah.
Right. It's a, okay.
I don't know. I don't remember the last time I saw that, but it's like, ideally there is, you know, not maybe not a pecking order, but just the etiquette in terms of like, you don't go out and catch five waves in a row. Like you don't catch a wave and paddle right back out to the peak and catch another wave. It's like, oh, that person hasn't caught a wave. Here you go. You catch this next one, you know? Mm-hmm. That's more of like the etiquette. And also like, you know, you're paddling and someone's riding and you make sure, you know, you stay out of their way. If you have to get hit by the wave, so be it. Like they're on the wave. You don't want to mess that up for them. Like you wouldn't want them messing it up for you. So mm-hmm. it's like, that's kind of more of the etiquette in the ocean.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that free camp. Is that the one you do for wounded?
No. So this veterans? Is called Get on the Board. It's just, for underprivileged kids, basically. We work with Virginia Beach Middle, and we're going to try and bring in some of the other schools as well locally. The head guidance counselor there at VB brings kids in every year when we do it, and it's like 30-40 kids that, you know, might not even think about doing surf camp, but definitely like their parents can't afford it. You know, it's not cheap.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just want to provide that experience for some other people that, you know, there's a lot of people that live within a mile of the beach and they don't see it as this awesome free natural resource. Mm-hmm. You know, they're, if you're scared of it, that's fine. You can have a healthy fear of the ocean, but like learn to enjoy it and appreciate it and go out. It should be a playground, you know? Yeah. So I want to make sure it's done so much for me that, you know, it's the least I could do is, you know, try to introduce it to some other people.
Yeah. And that's what we, you know, we were looking up that. So Virginia Beach is listed as number 44 top fittest cities in America, which we should be a little higher.
Good? I don't know.
44.
That's higher. That's
top 100. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many major cities there are in America.
That might be really bad. We need to
research that one. But one of the criteria for determining fittest is proximity to parks. And I think we have a very unique kind of place where we have this massive park sitting right here, you know,
the ocean,
pretty close. It's the beach and you know, Atlantic Park. And it's not always kind of recognized as a park where you can play, where you're kind of introducing somebody to surfing. It allows you to go and like experience that from a healthy kind of fitness.
I think the health aspect is huge. It's one of many benefits to surfing. Yeah. You know, there's the mental aspect of just, you know, going out there in nature, like anything you do in nature is good for you, your brain and your body and everything. The exercise you get from it, like mm-hmm. There's not much else that's better than the workout you get from going surfing. There's just so many different benefits to it. Like another key for me is like you're introducing these kids to surfing and they're starting to see the ocean in a different way. And, you know, maybe the last time they went down there, they went to 7-Eleven and got a candy bar and a drink and threw the can and the wrapper on the beach when they were done. And now all of a sudden they're surfing and appreciating the ocean and the beach a little bit more. And maybe they, you know, take their stuff and drop it in a trash can and, you know, that kind of thing, like creating people who are stewards of the environment and they actually think about it. I think surfing does that for people. Mm-hmm. Because you want to, like, you love it and you want to go do it again and you want your kids to be able to do it and your grandkids. And it's like, if we trash it, we're not going to be able to do that. Yeah. So it's like, to me, that's huge, trying to make sure that as many people as possible look at it for, you know, the great natural resource that it is and protect it.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing that too. And you know, our job is to introduce people to fitness. And, you know, I define fitness is motion and motion is life, right? And that's, you know, just a way to kind of introduce them to this world of being active,
right,
and appreciating the world around us.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I saw this guy surfing one time at the North End. It was right before the year that I quit. And the guy was out there and he was just running his mouth nonstop. And he's like, I don't even care if I catch a wave. It's all about the process. Like, and to me, I'm like, what is this guy thinking? This is before I had kind of gone through that whole experience and changed my thoughts on it. And now I see it like, yes, as far as being active and motion, it's like, and I think about the people that drop in on a closeout and, you know, scream F this or whatever, you know, it's like, it's the motion. It's going out there and, you know, getting the exercise, paddling and seeing birds fly by and seeing a porpoise and, you know, moving your body around and, you know, being in the water and like, who cares if you got a good wave? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just all, there's so many other benefits to it that you can't just look at that one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great, man. I'm real excited to be here with you and interview you, but I'm real excited about this book to come out. I know it's a little pressure on you, but the people that you've interviewed, I've seen a little bit of snippets of some of the people. And I think the people you've interviewed are people that I consider good represent the surf community really well here in Virginia Beach. And so.
Well, the most interesting thing to me about the different people that I've interviewed, and you probably half of them, you don't know who they are yet, but like, and it's the people that you wouldn't expect that are the most interesting to me. It's like getting those other stories of, you know, people that got into it in some different way, or they just have a different viewpoint on it, and they're total outsiders. You know, they're not part of the crew that you would expect to be in a book like this, you know, but it's like, their stories are fascinating. And like without them, to me, the book would have been really boring.
Yeah.
So it's been like such a great thing for me just to kind of, now when I go surfing, it's like I'm so much more open to meeting new people. I try to, my wife asks me every time I go surfing, did you make any new friends? And like, used to be like, I'm going out and catching my waves and coming in and going about my business. But now it's like, I go out there and yeah, I want to catch some waves, but it's like, I'll just randomly start talking to someone and you just like, you learn so much and you know, meet cool people. And it's like almost every time I just start talking to someone, I'm amazed at like, why didn't I do that for the last, you know, however many years? It's like, it's so cool.
Yeah. And so before we sign off, how can people support you and your project?
Yeah. So we are self-publishing the book. It's going to cost $40,000 for the printing. And so we launched a Kickstarter. And the Kickstarter goes on until mid-April, something like that. And we're trying to raise the $40,000 to pay for the printing. And if we don't hit our goal of $40,000, I don't know if you're familiar with Kickstarter, but if you don't hit your goal, you don't get anything. Mm. Everyone gets their money back that they pledged. So you can go on to Kickstarter.com and you can pledge your support, all different levels. You can like basically pre-buy a book. If you don't want it, if you just want to throw $5 in, that's great.
Hats, t-shirts, all that stuff.
There's hats, there's t-shirts, there's tote bags. There's a few bigger items too. We got a few photographers, local photographers, surf photographers from through the decades. Mo Sanford, a lot of people know Mo Daddy around here. Yeah. Andrew Tonra's got his gallery in there. Dick Mesrall.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's not from Virginia Beach, but has a ton of great photos from Virginia Beach. He has a gallery in there. Eddie Campo, John Wright. So like the, you know, these great surf photographers from the several decades, they all have a gallery in the book. And so I chose one print from each of them. And so on the Kickstarter, you can get an 18 by 12 print framed 21st Street Art Gallery. Joe is taking care of us up there, and a book for like a little bit, you know, a little higher pledge up to the highest with the VIP surf experience where we're doing, we're renting out the surf park for a session.
Really?
Just cool. The people that donate a certain amount. And, you know, it can be a coached set. If you need coaching, I'll be in there, you know, helping you out. And so you get the VIP session in there followed by dinner where, you know, we're going to go to Hearth and have an awesome meal and talk about the book. And I'll show a little behind the scenes of the book. So there's a lot of different levels you can donate at. Right now, we're about a third of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to, you know, keep pushing to try to
get to that level. I think it's really cool. Even in that, I mean, I don't know how publishing works at all, but I guess there's a reason you chose self-publishing. Versus,
well, with a story like this and knowing like knowing a lot of the people and a little bit about their stories, it's like there's a lot that you want in there that I don't want someone telling me what to keep in and what to take out. You know, it's like there's some raunchy stories in there, you know, like things were different 80s, 90s, you know, as far as what people did and got away with. And, you know, some of it funny, some of it could be over the line, whatever, but. And then, you know, people that experience just really heavy stuff and I wanted to make sure that I could decide what goes in and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I thought something like this, which is, you know, it's basically Virginia Beach surf culture. I wanted to represent it in the way that I feel in living it, it needs to be represented.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to get a publisher who decided how it was going to look and what was going to be in it.
Yeah. And this, it's just really cool how you're raising the money for it through Kickstarter and using our local photographers. And you mentioned Hearth, and that's, you know, Big Sam, who's a surfer. Yeah. And you're basically, you know, kind of using the surf community in a really positive way to bring light to this area, which is, I think is a really special area.
Yeah, yeah.
In general, so.
I feel like it's unintended consequence, but I'm starting to see it like kind of bringing the surf community together and kind of to the forefront, you know, as people outside the surf community kind of see, oh, what's going on over there? You know, they see the posts and all that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I've never gotten this much traction with any, anything I've ever posted. But, I mean, I don't care if people like my picture, but it's like.
I bought Pipe Dreams.
Did you actually read it though? That's the question.
I did. I read it. I did. Me and about five other guys did a book report on it.
I'm going to give you a quiz when we're done here.
I don't remember any of it. Well, cool. Well, Jason, appreciate you showing up on this podcast and
Thank you.
Wish you the best of luck.
I appreciate it. Kickstarter.com. I don't think you went on there yet, did you?
Yeah. I did. Yeah, did you
look? I'm not sure. Thank you. I appreciate everyone that a lot of people have gone on and supported it. And like I'm overwhelmed with the support that I've seen already from, you know, my friends and people I've never met. And it's like, you know, there's so many people tied to the surf community here that it's like, it's really cool to, you know, to have the honor to bring them this thing for their coffee table.
Cool. Yeah. We'll drop a link in the bio too.
Awesome.
So you can check out Kickstarter right there. So
right on.
Appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much. Do we work out now? Are we going to?
Yeah. We're done with the workout.
Oh, that was it?
That was it. Yeah. Jaw workout. All right. See you, Jason.
Okay, that's it for today. Thank you all for joining us on today's journey. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button and check us out at wearingsgem.com. Also, I would love to hear your feedback, questions, and any topic that you would like to hear more about. Feel free to email me. My email is jake@wearingsgem.com. See you all next time.